Your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio on this Thursday afternoon. We've got to hurry. We've got 20 minutes to build a house, the short show today, because White Sox baseball coming up. They take on the Royals on the south side this afternoon. You heard the giggle there. Dennis Rodkin is in the studio, writes about real estate for Crane Chicago Business. Dennis, welcome back.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Great, thanks. We'll talk to Bill Geiger a little bit later, but I want to start. You have written quite a bit over the past several months about the rehabbing, the development in the on the south side, right? In some of the south suburbs.
Right, south side of the city and south suburbs. It's rolling on. It's rolling into the far corners of those regions.
A couple of stories this past week. First, tell me this one about Continuum Capital and what they're doing, because it seems a little different than just a generic rehab project.
It is. So they're a lender to rehabbers, and along the way during this the years post-crash, they have picked up 170 houses in the south side neighborhoods and south suburbs, mostly south side neighborhoods, and they did the rehab themselves, filled them with renters. They saw this as an opportunity. The head of the company said...
So these were foreclosures?
Yeah, these were primarily distressed properties, right. Foreclosures and other distressed properties. And the CEO of the company, Clark Galembo, said to me, you know, we thought we could provide affordable housing on the south side, which is a very laudable goal. So they did the rehabs of these 170 homes. Some were light rehab, some were heavy, depending on the quality of the going in quality of the home. They have most of them, I think it's 88% of them, filled with renters.
Wow.
And now they've listed this as a portfolio for sale because the houses are in good shape. There's clearly a demand for renters. They've got most of them full. So they're essentially handing off this project to somebody who could then manage, or hoping to hand off this portfolio to somebody who could manage 170 rentals.
So they're not necessarily in 170 different sales to homeowners. They're selling this as a rental portfolio.
Yeah. They don't want to, yes, exactly. They don't want to sell onesies and twosies. They will sell fewer than 170. Like if you wanted everything they have in Calumet City or everything they have in Englewood, you could do that.
How many other companies are doing that in the city?
I don't know anybody doing...
this is a bank, which is really unusual, but didn't we talk earlier during the crisis that there were properties being purchased and then rented until the market improved and they were going to be sold? And
The biggest is Blackstone, a New York firm that invests in virtually every business there is. And in Chicago, nationwide, was buying up distressed properties during the housing crash and turning them into rentals. And their portfolio peaked in Chicago at about 2,500 homes, which is obviously a lot bigger than this 170 portfolio. Then there were many smaller companies. There were individuals. It's been quite a wave, just that rehab to rental. And one of the questions will be, over time, when do those all get sold off to single-family homeowners?
And it's interesting. So Continuum Capital doing that, the bank doing that. But then aside from that, you also wrote just about your mom-and-pop rehabbers.
Yeah. So as you said, you know, I've been covering this wave for a couple of years now. I mean, we're seeing it everywhere in Maywood and Cicero and virtually every neighborhood on the south and southwest sides. And so the question was, well, who does this? I mean, you and I have talked about the land bank is selling a lot of these properties, Renovo, Clark Galembo, all these sorts of firms are lending to these people, helping them get going. So who are the people who are doing it? So I went out and I interviewed a bunch of them and found, I sort of focused on people who are Southside based. So you're not a New York investor doing it or a Northside investor doing it. And a lot of these people have found this is a great small business opportunity that has legs, at least for the next several years, no telling how long it will go. But they also have sort of a motivation to help the community they live in. There are people who said, you know, I'm a minority person. My community, people in my community don't really have access to capital, but I did because I had a big retirement account and I borrowed from it, that sort of thing. These are people who, the ones I spoke to, are people who want to help this wave of refreshing the housing on the south side.
Someone very wisely said that the housing crisis might have been like a forest fire or a prairie fire that was very painful, but then would allow for new growth and for rejuvenation. Are you seeing, that person was me, by the way.
That was, very wise.
Right,
someone who's very, very wise.
But are we seeing that now? Are we seeing these fruits starting to come?
Yes, I think we are. And a few years ago, it was hard, let's say 5 years ago, it was hard to anticipate this. But so many people have hooked up, in have fed into this wave. I talked to you about the Southwest Organizing Project, which did it in Marquette Park, and all these other references we've had. It's this incredible mosaic of people who, for various motivation, from various motivations, have helped to refresh all this housing. And one of the things you and I have talked about is this idea that the person who was foreclosed out of that house, that, of course, is unfortunate that that happened, but those were people who couldn't afford to refresh right. this housing. And so the positive aftermath of all that is so much of the housing on the south side and in the south suburbs is getting this mid-2000 or 2015, 2018 refresh that will sustain it over the course of the next several
years. Right, we don't have to celebrate the fire to appreciate what comes after it or the results.
Oh, stop with the metaphors.
It was a burning blaze, just a... speaking of prairies, let's go to Naperville, because there was one there about 50 years ago.
That was clever.
And talk about high-end housing. A Naperville home goes for $3
million? $3 million for the first time since 2011. It's the first to sell for over $2 million since late 2011, so nearly 7 years.
Back in 2011, were $3 million sales common?
There was one in 2011, but okay. there were two over $2 million in 2011. In the years, I looked back, in the years from 2005 to 2011, every year there was at least one, usually two or more, sales at $2 million and up. Stops at the end of 2011, nothing, though there have been homes on the market for $6 million in Naperville and less. This one is the first. This one on Oxford Lane that sold for $3 million last week is the first since 2011 to cross that $2 million line.
So is that a sign of anything, or is it just an interesting little fact?
It might be a sign of anything. Certainly the real estate agent wants to believe that this may unlock the future of the market, but we'd have to see more to right. decide that it has unlocked the future of the market.
30 seconds. Take me to the Palmolive building and this condo that went for $6.25 million.
$6.25 million. And what's that's a full floor at the Palmolive building, the old Playboy building. And what I think is most relevant about that is the 16th property so far in 2018 in the Chicago area to sell for $6 million or more.
Wow.
This time last year, there had been one. So one at this point in 2017, 16 at this point in 2018.
Is that the building with the blue flame on top?
No, it's the building, it's the Art Deco building at about 800 North Michigan.
Okay.
I'm sorry, about 900 North Michigan.
Okay, I'm thinking of something a little bit further east then from there. Okay. Dennis Rodkin, read more from him at Crane Chicago Business. Nice new website unveiled earlier this week.
Everything's redesign
nice
came out yesterday.
Nice to see you again. We'll do it again in a week or so.
Thanks, Steve.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Bill Geiger is in the studio. Our conversations with Bill are sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Good to be here. Nice to see you, sir.
So Terry Savage was here on Wednesday, and we were watching the Fed. The Fed came out, and they said that they weren't going to raise their benchmark interest rate at this meeting, but also hinted pretty strongly that they probably will
soon,
a couple of times before the year's out, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you're around retirement age, what does that mean for you, or what should you watch there?
Well, what I'm about to tell you is not my opinion. This is basically physics. When interest rates go up, and most economists, and I agree with this, that they're going up. When interest rates go up, if you own a bond in your retirement portfolio in any way, shape, or form, the value of that, the price of that is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
So people who own bonds when interest rates are going up are going to lose money. So if you're getting close to retirement, and historically we've been taught what? You get close to retirement, take money out of stock and put it into
bonds. Right.
It's not going to protect you. It's going to hurt you. You're actually going to lose money.
Interest rates have been going up very slowly. So have we seen any of this? Or?
We begin to see it. I wrote an article for Fortune magazine about just this topic. It was over a year ago. And we've seen people losing money in their bond portfolios already.
Right. So
particularly, and let me just mention,
absolutely.
If you've got a 401k plan, and you've got a target date fund or a target retirement fund like the something company 2020 fund, those are filled with bonds. And they're generally filled with junk bonds, Steve, which is even worse on the downside.
Do you like those targeted funds?
No, I don't.
Right.
No, I don't. Because people...
So if I can just explain to people, so say you're 40 and you want to retire, people will put together a fund, and then they'll monitor it and change it as you get older automatically.
Yeah, they'll change it automatically. A lot of people, because investing is a kind of a tough gig, right? They're like, surely Vanguard or Fidelity or somebody can do this better than me. So they choose the date they're going to retire, the 2030 fund. And what happens is the mutual fund company automatically moves money from stocks into bonds right. as they get closer to retirement. So people think, well, I'm getting more conservative. I'm getting safer. But it's not true. They're loading up in those. These fund companies are loading up with bonds, especially junk bonds. And Steve, what's going to happen is folks are going to lose money that didn't think they were going to.
So is the relative security of the bond is not worth the risk of losing?
Well, it's not risk. I mean, it's virtually assured
the reality,
that you're going to lose money. And part of our process when we sit down with people to put together a retirement plan is we analyze their current portfolio using an institutional version of Morningstar, and it tells us exactly what that bond risk is.
Yeah, and you point out 401ks. I know there are a lot of funds, right? Because you want to balance your 401k, so you're going to be in bonds.
The 401ks are notorious for having target retirement funds in them, and people just throw their money in and they forget about it, and it's dangerous.
And so what would you have people do? What should we be doing these times of rising rates?
First of all, understand exactly what you own. I mean, before you can make any adjustments, any recommendations, you better understand what you own.
Right.
And that's the first thing I'd recommend.
Which sounds so silly, but as you're talking to me and you brought up the retirement funds, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not sure about myself. I mean, I think I know what I own, but I don't.
Yeah, if you're listening, or Steve, you do this yourself. Check in your 401k plan.
Oh, now you want me to check my 401k.
Yeah, not the value, because it went up this morning. Okay, I want you to check to see if you own those.
Okay, and see what's there.
And you really shouldn't at this time.
All right, so that's good advice.
Okay. Well, Steve, listen, if folks are listening and they're kind of wondering about their retirement portfolios, we have a really neat piece of software. It's by Morningstar. It's an institutional version. And on a complimentary basis, we can help them understand exactly how much risk there is in their portfolio. And if you're in your late 50s, the number one thing on your mind should be, how much risk do I have? And then how do I control that risk? And then how do I create income for the rest of my life?
What percentage of us understand what risk we're at?
Very small.
Yeah.
A lot of people have an itchy feeling in the back of their neck, but when they see the results of the reports we do, it's quite a surprise to a lot of folks.
Bill Geiger, great to see you. Let's talk again.
Good to see you, sir.